Morgan for Monitor. In a few minutes, a young woman from New York who recently spent several weeks among the village people of North Vietnam. And she'll relate some of her experiences there. At 25 minutes before the hour, Margaret Whiting.
Oh, he walks like a man, and he talks like a man, and he looks like a man, and he feels just like a man should. He's got hands like a man, and he stands like a man. He's got hips like a man, and he moves just like a man should.
I agree. There's nothing like a lark.
Lark has a good, easy taste.
Lark has an inner chamber of charcoal granules for a taste people really like.
I think they're the nicest cigarette there is.
Right. There's nothing like a lark.
There is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette.
Carol Brightman is a 27-year-old New Yorker who edits a magazine called Viet Report. The two-year-old magazine attempts, she says, to explore all sides of the conflict in Vietnam, both North and South. Recently, Miss Brightman spent 4 weeks in North Vietnam as a member of Lord Russell's committee to investigate United States bombing north of the demilitarized zone. She traveled into the countryside accompanied by interpreters. NBC News correspondent Wilson Hall talked with her about one such excursion.
Miss Brighton, while you were in North Vietnam, did you see any of the defenses that the countryside had against air attacks?
Well, the principal defense in the countryside and the hamlets and the cooperatives is the local self-defense militia units, which are mainly composed of very young men and women, usually under 22, who carry rather ancient rifles. In a tiny hamlet very near the place where the bombing took place near Tan Hoa City on January 29th, I met the commander of one of these local militia units, a young girl named Tran Thi Hoa, who's 21 years old, and she escorted me out to review her troops. This was very close to the Ham Rong Bridge, which is probably Tan Hoa's maybe last remaining military target. It's a rather large bridge over the Ma River and has been the target of repeated attacks since early 65. It still stands. And out on this spit of land on the river are about 18 young men and women in little trenches with rifles. Some of them have rifles poking out of the trenches. Others have medical kits. Some were reading books, and they were more or less on duty 24 hours. These local self-militia units, though, well, at least Tran Thi Hoa's unit, also included a number of children around 8 or 9 or 10 years old, whose duty it was to constantly supply the units in or out of attack with ammunition, with food, and so on. Older people in the villages, older women and men, were concerned with keeping alerts and observation posts and maintaining what minimal first aid facilities these small villages have.
How was this explained to you by this young lady or by...
Well, it was explained to me in that way, and also this particular cooperative, Nan Yan is the name of it, had a little stage, a little theater constructed, which was an absolutely exact replica of the village, every tree, every house. And all of a sudden, the stage came alive. It turned out that her younger brother was underneath the stage animating it. And American planes appeared, little miniatures in the plane, in the sky. And all the rifle unit that I had seen a few minutes earlier came alive. And then little children started going up and down coconut trees, bringing camouflage and supplies. And you could see that the entire village was mobilized in this way.
Was the morale high?
Extremely high in this area, and I would say high throughout the countryside of North Vietnam, but particularly where self-defense units are mobilized to this extent, of course, it's higher. The question of how effective these children with their rifles are is another question. I think their main service is to maintain morale.
How do they maintain their morale?
Well, primarily through fighting back, I would say, that these militia units operate, of course, in terms of fighting back with rifles, but there's also this kind of organization on the level of production. In other words, when a marketplace has been bombed or when a village has been bombed, there's an attempt to remobilize production through the cooperatives, and everyone tries to produce twice as much as they did before to make up for the losses. They also maintain a very active cultural life. For example, on the very day of the bombing that I was in, January 29th, that night, one of the local militias, which had been firing at the planes that morning, entertained me with some of their revolutionary songs.
What were they singing about, Miss Brightman?
Well, that particular song was about was using rice production as a way of fighting back against American planes, increasing rice production, combining this with the fighting spirit of the local militia. They have other songs which are directed, which are specifically about shooting down planes and how to do this. Generally all, I guess you would call, revolutionary songs.
Are they effective in shooting down planes?
These rifle units?
Yes. Or even that, or the anti-aircraft?
Well, I think that the main service that the rifle units provide is to communicate a sense of confidence and mobilization to the villages they live in. And in that sense, they serve to boost morale. This particular militia unit, which is Tran Thi Hoa's unit, is located near the Hom Rong Bridge, which is the object of repeated attacks by U.S. planes. And I asked the deputy commander of military forces in Tan Hoa just how effective these rifles were. And he said that the province had claimed 187 planes shot down since February 7th, 65, and that of those, only 14 had been definitely determined to have been shot down by rifles.
Did you see any American planes shot down while you were there?
No, I did not.
Thank you very much, Carol Brightman. Wilson Hall, reporting for Monitor.
Miss Brightman, who recently spent 4 weeks in North Vietnam, is editor of the magazine Viet Report. Each weekend on Monitor, you'll hear background reports on the news and, of course, all the late-breaking developments.
Mr. Leonard?
Yes?
I'm from International Harvester, doing a survey of Cub Cadet tractor owners.
Come in, dear boy. That cadet's a jewel. Not a toy, but a tractor. Built like the big IH tractors.
Right, and it gives you lots more free time, right?
Oh, indeed. Mows, tows, works my garden. I have the large one, you know, 12 horsepower.
Good. What do you do with all your extra free time, Mr. Leonard?
You may have noticed it's frightfully warm in here.
Yeah?
That's because I raise tropical plants, like this lovely brute.
Beautiful. What's it called?
I call him Manny. Not too close there, Mr. Surveyman. Oh, Manny. You know, gulping your food gives you indigestion.
Whatever your hobby is, you'll find more time for it with a Cub Cadet tractor. 7, 10, or 12 horsepower. Gear drive or automatic transmission. For the name of your nearest cadet dealer, phone Western Union and ask for operator 25. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Al Capp says there's a crisis in education that only he is worried about. If you feel like worrying with him, stick around. Al sounds off in about 5 minutes. Here's Roger Williams. Monitor household tip. Now, this one sounds wacky, but it's really supposed to work. If the tops of your tables are scratched and dull-looking, go to the refrigerator and get out a jar of mayonnaise. That's right. Put a dab of mayonnaise on the scratches and then rub with a soft cloth. For removing dirt, put mayonnaise all over the tabletop. Leave it on for a little while, then rub hard with a cloth. And that, folks, is what's known as starting from scratch and ending with a big smear. But again, it's supposed to work. Another tip for you. You got a moment? Let's talk carpets, like Stevens Gulistan's Grand Prix. Now, I don't pretend to be a carpet expert, but anybody can tell that this carpet is nothing short of spectacular. It's got give to it. Starts out springy, then stays springy. The pile is Orlon 33 acrylic by DuPont.
Springier, fancier, it's a carpet fiber that's livelier. Springier, livelier, made by DuPont, it's Orlon 33.
Put a new spring in your step. Take a test walk on Stevens Gulistan's Grand Prix plush carpet, made with Orlon 33, the springy carpet fiber.
There she goes. She's walking away. Each step that she takes brings heartaches my way. He's won her heart. I lost her some way. There she goes. She's walking away. That it shows. She's walking away. Oh, there she goes. La 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 la. 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 Oh, if I hadn't cheated, if I that it shows. She's walking away. Oh, there she goes. Oh, there she goes. There she goes.
New by Buddy Greco. There she goes.
Hoop! Whole throat and everything.
Monitor's other expert on nothing with opinions on everything, Al Capp, with some thoughts on why long hair may be here to stay.
There's a crisis in education that seems to have upset nobody but me. There's been a drastic dropout in attendance at barber colleges while medical schools are filled to bursting. I tell you, the situation is simply hair-raising. You see the danger. 10 years from now, this country will have far too many doctors and just a few elderly, decrepit barbers. We'll be the healthiest but the hairiest race in the world, a nation of beetles. John, my barber, is one father whose heart has been broken by this suicidal trend among the youth of our country. He stopped shaving me the other day and whooshed his razor around at me the way Errol Flynn used to whoosh his sword around at Basil Rathbone. That boy of mine, that Louis, he growled. He said, I'd like to get him in this chair. Your own son? I said. No, no, said John. I mean the rat who put it into his head to switch from Columbo's barber school to Columbia Medical School. And then my barber told me a tragic story. From the time his son was an infant, it was clear that he inherited his father's gift. At the age of 3, he nipped both ear tips off a neighbor's cat. At 7, he'd wrapped a hot towel around his little sister's head and delivered a nonstop 25-minute monologue to the helpless, half-suffocated child on a variety of subjects he was totally ignorant of. John was overjoyed to see that his child had the stuff in him that barbers are made of. He was determined that his boy would study at the finest college, Columbo's College on 14th Street. For years, John scrimped and saved and shortchanged, and when Louis graduated from high school, his father gave him his life savings and told him it was for tuition at Columbo's. When Louis came back, his father was horrified to hear he'd registered at Columbia instead of Columbo's. The boy claimed that that's what he thought his father had meant all the time, but I said, aren't you proud that your son is going to be a doctor? John said, what's there to be proud about? Figure it out for yourself. Why are those medical schools crowded? Because every bum's son wants to be a doctor. Those crazy young kids, they're like sheep. But do you know anybody's son who has the ambition to be a barber? Well, I had to admit, I hadn't heard any parents boast about anything like that lately. Then, said John, you can understand why I'm heartbroken. 10 years from now, the streets and pool rooms and the vagrancy courts, they'll all be full of doctors. There'll be too many of them for any of them to make a living. Nobody will respect them. Nobody will want their daughter to marry one of them. But do you know who'll be respected? You know who people fight to get appointments with? A few very old barbers. Well, I said maybe it was fate. Maybe your boy was born to be a doctor. My boy was born to be a barber, a master barber, said John. Do you know what he'd do when he was a little kid? And I'd give him a dollar extra for clipping the bushes. That boy wouldn't thank me. That boy would just stuff the money in his pocket and sneer at me. Well, I tipped John a dollar and said things could be worse. He stuffed the money in his pocket and sneered at me. This is Al Capp rushing off to the nearest barbershop to have his appendix removed, talking to you on NBC's Monitor.
Al's with us every weekend talking about matters of great or not so great sociological import. Our expert on nothing with opinions on everything. Speaking of experts, Dr. Joyce Brothers, the noted psychologist, author, and syndicated columnist, will begin a new feature on Monitor next weekend. Among the subjects Dr. Brothers intends to discuss, can a man love two women at the same time? I don't want to tip you off, but yes. You can be sure Dr. Brothers will cover a number of such provocative subjects, so listen for her beginning next weekend on Monitor. Now, a message meant for you.
Put more sparkle in your life today with sparkling champagne. Get with living the exciting way. Drink sparkling champagne.
Sparkling champagne is like nothing else you ever tasted. Except champagne. Champale, C-H-A-M-P-A-L-E. Sparkling Champagne. Buy it wherever beer is sold. Costs just pennies more. Sparkling Champagne Malt Liquor. Metropolis Brewery, Trenton, New Jersey. Mitchell's Orchestra, Mashkenada. H. Morgan for Monitor, back momentarily.
See to the latest news now, it's on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now, from everywhere. From NBC.
The Dodge Boys is setting out to fight for the kind of deals you'll know are right.
Fight with the good guys.
These rebels are really pounding leather to get you in a great new Dodge together, the Dodge Boys.
The good guys, they've rounded up a great new breed of cars you've got to see. These babies put you in the lead.
Ride with the good guys.
The Dodge Boys.
Come on in to Dodge Truck Center, Maspeth. See the Dodge truck that'll work for you and see how we protect you for thousands of miles after others have left you cold.
The good guys.
You can tell they're good guys. They all wear white hats.
Slow starters pick up speed by switching to Big Wilson. Mornings from 5 to 9 on the big voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.